This is a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. Well, hello, and welcome to Making Biblical Family Life Practical. I'm Hal Young, and my beloved wife, Melanie Young, is not here at the moment, but we are on the return leg of a 4,000-mile speaking trip. Just a fantastic trip we've had the past 3 weeks, and we're coming to you literally from on the road. We are in Black Mountain, North Carolina, and I am putting this together in our Ford E350 van, and so you're getting the full road trip experience. All that's missing is the highway noise and the hailstorm that we drove through coming over the mountains. So we have just recently had a part of a presentation by our son John Calvin Young called Christ and College. He talked about the experience of being a Christian student on a secular campus, how you can grow in your faith, how you can stand firm for the Lord, how you can emerge a stronger Christian than when you arrived, even if you're in a hostile environment. And he found a lot of things that can help you going into that situation, knowing kind of where the traps and the stumbling blocks are located, and things that may actually be opportunities in disguise, opportunities for ministry, opportunities for growth. This is the conclusion of this workshop, which he gave at a recent conference in Peoria, Illinois. So I'm going to hand this back over. This is John Calvin Young speaking on being a Christian on a secular campus.
As far as subjects and departments, and this applies both to the major you pick, but also what courses you're going to take, the way you're going to fill in, they call them often foundational requirements or general educational requirements. So the courses you need, no matter the major. You typically need a couple sciences, you need an English, you need a history, you need something that's in the political science, economics sort of area. You know, you're going to need something in each of all these fields just to give you a broad-based education. It's actually a lot of fun to take those courses. They have a lot of flexibility. But you know what? You want to know what subjects you're taking, you know, both the difficulty and the likelihood of challenge, all that sort of thing. So the first thing I have to say about dealing with professors that might be out of your comfort zone and out of where you'd like to operate is do be skeptical to a certain point. You don't need to take everything you're told at face value. The professor is no smarter than you and may actually have equal or less real education outside of a very narrow specialty. So don't just assume the professor said it's gospel. Now, when it comes to class rules, yeah, you better believe it. But, you know, as far as on subject, philosophy on religion, on psychology or something, just because a professor said it doesn't make it gospel truth. In fact, in some situations, some universities, that professor may not really know anything that has happened in the last 25 years in his field. So you may know some things that he doesn't. Or you may have interests in areas that the professor has never thought of. I recall one time I raised my hand in an economics course and I just referenced a historical pattern of over-rewarding of labor in exchange for loyalty or something. He was talking about this in labor theory, and I just told him the story. He said, wow, that's really cool. You should write a paper. So he said, it's just history that this happened in 700s in England in a certain way, and it's called Weargeld. And he said, no, don't you understand? No one else reads both those things, you know, that you're someone who actually does know both, and that might be worth something. So you can bring observations and things to the table. I can say, go and do outside research. Even if you're offering a totally contradictory opinion to what the professor is putting forward, if you can back it up from a real resource and real research, most honest professors will love you, honestly. That's something that's hard to understand is just how soul-deadening it is to spend 10 years of your life getting a world-class education in your favorite subject and then spending the rest of your life talking to kids who are asleep and on Facebook. You know, that it's really, really discouraging. And so if you can be that student who cares, even if you totally disagree with everything he just said, but you can show that you care about the same subject and willing to go do the readings. In fact, you're found another reading to bring in, another one that's, you know, something different, most professors are really going to respect that. On the subject of subjects that you may not want to take, do talk to your parents, professors, pastors, anybody you know who might have a good opinion on subjects to stay away from. Particularly in the college environment, you might want to talk to, you know, the local pastor or the local leader of the Christian group or something. Say, you know, okay, have you heard of Professor so-and-so? You know, how are they? You know, is that likely to be a friendly course or something that's really going to be a slog because I'm going to disagree with everything said? You know, that's really useful advice. And simple truth is, there are some subjects you do not want to take in college, at least in most environments, you know, most secular schools. I've mentioned some of them, but honestly, the ones I saw that tended to have the most negative professors and the most interesting challenges were psychology, comparative religion, sociology, oddly enough, theater. I love theater. I'm involved in a theater group today, Christian theater group back home, but theater departments tend to have some really interesting lifestyles going on, and their background philosophically is not a great one. In the average, you may find exception, but those may not be the best places to major, may not be the best places to spend a lot of time. And lastly, you don't have time to take some really good subjects and keep your sanity. I recall one of the best courses I ever took was a course I took my senior year, and it was an extremely challenging philosophy course. And we sat down with this book and read through it, and I was agreeing with it for the first 30-40% of it, and man, it was good. I mean, he was right on, spot on. I got to a certain point, I'm starting to realize he's headed off in an entirely different direction. He's denying the existence of God and all this other stuff. Where did he go wrong? I had this crisis. I spent 3 days over a long weekend lying on the couch thinking and going and looking things up in the Bible and cross-checking, and finally figured out, okay, here's where his logical argument goes wrong. I'm not insane. Yeah, he is. Yeah, that he is right up to this point, and this is where he went wrong. So I can accept this and throw out the rest and get it straight in my head. It took me 3 days. And not always are you going to have the sort of time to do that. And that same professor actually offered another really cool course the next term. And man, I would have loved to take it. But it was my final semester. Just like, I've got to finish my capstone project. There's no way that I'm going to have the time to engage with this in a way that doesn't hurt me or doesn't leave something that I'm going to have to deal with later. You know, I can't do justice to this course and justice to myself and take it at this time. So I actually skipped it, that final course. So anyway, just be aware of that. That even a course that you can successfully come to terms with may not be the right choice at the right time. Next, the social life, the rest of time outside of the classroom. It's a challenge to be in and yet not of the world. And it's not always obvious what that means. So start with, most of us are going off to college and we know nobody. All our friends are back home. Well, you know, opportunity to go meet some people, to make some new friendships, make some new relationships, and your choice of friends and the people you spend time with has a surprising amount of impact on your day-to-day life and health and happiness. Now, I trust we're all familiar with the verse that says, the companion of fools shall be destroyed. Yeah, you know, that applies. College is honestly has a lot of fools in it, usually. But picking good friends is a good part of this. I'd say you look around for those people in your environment, people you run into, church, Christian groups, and other classes. Look for those whose primary identity is as a Christian. You know, that's something, in college, just like in homeschool groups, everything else, if you meet new people, you kind of have this little spiel I used to think of as a college barcode. This is where I'm from, and this is my major, and you know, this is my favorite color, and I live so-and-so, and I go to this church, you know, sort of thing. Well, I found it correlated really strongly with the people who were the most intense Christians, the people you really want to talk to, for whom the fact that they were a Christian or something very similar, you know, where they go to church was going to be the first or second thing out of their mouth rather than the 10th. You know, that was something that was interesting to watch. You know, be a Christian first and an engineer or Sigma Delta or the valedictorian or the track star second. And the places where I had friends for whom they identified first and foremost as Christians, those were the people I really got the most out of friendship and really was blessed the most by. In your social life, in your day-to-day life, with your friends, there are two main things you need to watch out for. The first is you may, very likely will, face condemnation or backlash, and that includes from other Christians. It's kind of sad, actually, but Christians, particularly those who themselves are compromising and you're not you can get some real bitter backlash from them. Just be wary. Rudyard Kipling said in his poem, If, on let all men count with you, but none too much. Honestly, it's sad to say sometimes you have to do that even around your Christian friends. The people that hurt me worst in college were fellow Christians, quite honestly. Something my parents told me at that time that helped come to terms with it said, it's not you, it's the Holy Spirit. That if you're standing there and you're living out your Christian witness and you're not compromising with the world, and they are, the Holy Spirit is probably eating them up. And they can turn and repent, or they can really lash out. And so, you know, you can have somebody who tells you, I mean, you're just shoving your faith down my throat. I mean, I don't share your principles. Why do you keep pushing them on me? Well, you're not. But the Holy Spirit is. They know, you know, in their heart that what they're doing is wrong. So that's just to kind of warn you, I guess, that just because someone's a professing Christian doesn't mean that they're necessarily going to be your best friend or that they're not going to hurt you. The other way that it's quite easy to be drawn to one direction or the other by friends is you may experience just kind of quiet pressure to change. And that can feel more like success than losing. The best way I ever found to put it is keep an eye on who you're hanging out with and what excuses you make for them. You know, I recall at one point I was actually really, I was deeply integrated into a group that was some Christians, some non-Christians. I was hanging out with a little bit of a faster crowd than I usually did. And I wasn't doing anything wrong. But I found myself kind of making mental excuses for them when they were. And that's kind of the first step to getting comfortable with it. It was the first step to eventually doing it yourself. And it just kind of shocked me at one point where I realized, wait a second. I'm not saying that we need to walk around all day, you know, sinner, sinner, sinner. You know, jeez, we are too. But, you know, if you find yourself making excuses for someone else's sin, that can be a good sign that you're being drawn into that sort of area. So be careful. You know, you're going to be around people who are fools, who are not serving our Lord. And success can sometimes be the most intoxicating thing. Something else to be careful about, though, and this ties into what I just said, is be careful about burning your bridges. It can be a real struggle when you see something going on that you know the Lord doesn't approve of, whether to call out that sin, say something about it, when you see it. Something I can say from sad experience is if you don't have a very good relationship with somebody already, it's likely not going to do a lot of good to just walk up to them and challenge them on their sin. It can, in fact, sadly, even worsen matters. I mean, I got stuck in a situation. It wasn't my fault, but someone was assuming that I was approved of their sin simply because I was one of the few people that actually talked to them. And I tried very gently to break it that, no, I'm not saying you're a terrible person, but I can't agree with that. You know, please don't talk to me about this. They turned so hard on me, they never spoke to me again. And in fact, my other friends were reporting that she was lashing out even to some degree to them about me. It didn't help. You know, that's all I'm saying, that it's not our role to go around telling people that they're sinners and give them an itemized list. We're all sinners. You know, some things may be more public, have bigger consequences, you know, may do more damage to somebody than others, but that it's all sin in the eyes of God. And in most situations, leave that up to God, I would say. The balance with that is say what you need to say. Like, I couldn't let that person go on thinking that I was just, you know, happy with their sin. But do remember that Christ ate with publicans and tax collectors. You can too. If you're not being tempted, if you're not being led astray by their lifestyle, it can be a huge witness just living out your own Christian life in their immediate context. And you may be the only person doing that in their circle. You know, I recall very consciously deciding to remain friends with certain people that the things they were dealing with were not temptations for me. It wasn't something that I felt was dragging me towards what they were doing. And I realized that, yeah, I was very likely the only Christian they knew. You know, so that's part of it. You know, I'm not saying you can't witness to people, and particularly if you have, particularly if you're offering the gospel at the same time, particularly if you do have some context and some relationship where it comes up, you're much more likely to have something, you know, you can do with that. And don't let anything I say don't witness to people. I mean, I'm hammering that just simply because I've seen a lot of a lot of Christian homeschoolers come on the campus and they're so shocked by what they're seeing, they want to be the truth teller, just telling people where they're sinners. And that is not helpful insofar as it's just that. Last thing here is just don't get too desperate for a relationship. And that's really, really, really hard. I can say that as someone who's still single and 26 and not real happy about it right at the moment. But colleges, particularly secular ones, I'll borrow a phrase from a book, are full of larval men and women. That even among the Christians, there's very, very few mature young folk out there in the college environment. And so the fact that everyone else is larva in a sense of adulthood and maturity is not a big deal if you're also terminally immature. But if you're a homeschool grad, if you've been raised right, you may be years ahead of most of your peers in terms of readiness for adult life and, you know, just readiness to embark upon marriage, upon life. So don't get too desperate there. Watch out for the good ones. You know, there may be, you may meet somebody. You know, both my brothers met really sweet Christian girls in college, but recognize that, you know, if you come from a small town, you come from a church, and you've known the same 50 kids within 3 years of your age group, all your childhood, it may think, wow, I'm going to college, and there's 1,200 kids in my year. Surely there's going to be a lot of cool, marriageable people there. Well, maybe not. You know, from my perspective, the worth of a godly woman is above rubies. Well, she's rare. There's not many. So, you know, just good people and good relationship material may be scarcer on the ground than it was even growing up. So just don't get desperate is all I have to say there. Now, depending on the college, depending on the place you go, fraternities and Greek life may be idealized on campus. It may be a very big deal. This doesn't happen at all universities. Mine, though, is one of the most Greek universities in the nation. 75% of men, about 80% of women joined a Greek organization. And to not be on that list basically meant you didn't have a social life, usually. It's like, okay. And I looked around, and the interesting thing is, in any environment, these organizations are not all created equal. The key thing, and that's something I really have to say to the parents, is don't assume your child has totally lost their mind if they're talking suddenly about joining a Greek organization. Ask them if they're losing their mind. There are organizations that might be healthy. That a lot of these organizations were started as Christian young people's organizations, and some of them still maintain that sort of vision and that sort of context. To the youth, I'll tell you, A, even if you're living there next to people, you don't know everything that's going on in those organizations. And it's a lot harder and costs a lot more in terms of social capital to get out once you're in than to have never have joined in the first place. A key observation with these sorts of things is that even if you are not required to do something that is against your conscience, it's very likely that you'll be expected to stand by and tacitly approve of other people doing things that you cannot approve of. It may not be everywhere, but just be aware of that. You know, that there can be gentlemen's agreements in place, you know, handshake deals, or even just the assumption that if you're this guy's fraternity brother, you can't say no to him doing that. You can't step in, even though that's a toxic situation. That's a real bad thing. So be very careful if you're trying to make a decision about joining an organization like this, and ask as many questions as you can from everyone you can, and take it with a lot of prayer and carefulness. Just day-to-day in social life, it's difficult. Some schoolers are often socially open and yet not hardened in the way that kids who grew up in a mean girl's existence are. You know, that there's a lot of intensity to this. Scarily, a lot of college students haven't left middle school yet. I mean, that sounds kind of ridiculous, but I have never seen such cliques and backbiting and little barriers and, you know, these people don't hang out with those people because they don't rate high enough on the scale, you know, sort of thing that I did in college. And that is pretty shocking as a homeschooled young person. Another thing is, the world is changing, but the colleges aren't quite there yet. If you are an intellectual, by which I mean you have a functioning brain and are curious about anything and like to talk about anything you've ever learned in your entire life, you're an intellectual and you are probably a nerd. And that may not be a popular thing in the world we're in college. It's really weird. Even at a school that is known for its academics, and nobody would be there except for the academics, there can be this weird sort of anti-intellectualism where they're going to go for broke in the classroom, and then if you speak a word about class outside of class, they're just like, who are you? You know, it's this really weird kind of two-faced existence, but that can happen too. Get used to the idea you may have to make your own fun. You know, I am the first to say that, you know, you can go sometimes to an event that's not to your liking and have a honest good time. I went to lots of dance parties and drank not a drop of liquor, but had a really good ball at the same time. But you may have to get used to the idea that you have to build your own fun, make your own opportunities. Don't be afraid to do uncool things, because guess what? You may find your best friends there doing them with you. You know, I ended up doing some things that just didn't make a lot of sense. You know, I ran into a bunch of kids that started actually with a group that's learning swing dancing together, but they were playing children's games, hide and go seek and that sort of thing, in a dark classroom building at 10 p.m. at night. We actually got permission. It was a ball. We would hold pitch black tag and things across three or four levels of this old classroom building, and everyone signed off on it. It's like, you know what? All you guys involved are, you know, campus leaders and resident advisors in the dorms and leaders of Bible studies, and you're all sober. And guess what? I remember a security guard telling me, he said, I know all y'all, and you're not getting into trouble like the kids down the hill in the fraternity house, so just keep doing. Don't break a leg. You know, so sometimes doing even uncool things can end up, you find the right people there, self-selecting. Remember what your parents taught you about dares. You dare more not doing a dare than you do doing a dare, if that makes sense. And a social dare can be just as bad as a personal one. And by that, I mean the sort of thing like, you're never going to get a date if you don't join this sort of organization. Or, no one's going to like you if you don't drink alcohol. Or, you know, no one's ever going to find you pretty if you don't dress like this. That's a social dare. That's not a personal one, but it can be just as dangerous. Don't listen to it. Don't let acceptance drive you, nor rejection. Don't succumb to the temptation to be driven by the desire to be in the inner ring. You know, C.S. Lewis wrote an excellent essay about that. It's worth looking up, called The Inner Ring. But that can really drive, as I said, that success that eats away at you. Don't let that drive your desires. Remember that you're more mature than most around you, and your ability and willingness to talk to people on all sorts of socioeconomic levels and all sorts of backgrounds is a plus, not a minus. You know, sometimes people get real twitchy about this sort of thing, but that is a good thing, you know, that you can make connections across those lines. You talk to the people who aren't talked to. That you can talk to the most popular guy on campus over here, and you can talk to the person who nobody will sit with in the cafeteria the next day. That is a good thing. And last I can say, be real. Few things are in as short supply on a college campus as real people. Everyone's got facade up. You know, we used to talk in the Christian group and say, you know, everyone we talk to is fine. You know, how are you? I'm fine. Sometimes their tones will tell you they're lying through their teeth. You know, they're not fine. They're dealing with everything on earth. They're bearing loads that people aren't supposed to be bearing. And just by being real about the fact that you're struggling, you're dealing with things. I remember one time we had a men's Bible study called Man Group. It was a lot of fun. Well, I invited a guy on my hall who I knew pretty well to come, and he was pretty much completely unchurched sort of guy. And he was a decent type. He didn't get in a lot of trouble, but he was not following the Lord. And I invited him and didn't think he was going to come. He came one day. Sitting down there, and we had this one guy, the perennial oversharer. So we got prayer request time, and it got awkward really fast because he had a lot of things to share. And even normally, it was fairly awkward. I just thought, my friend hates awkwardness. He's never going to come back. This is going to be terrible. Walk out 20 minutes later, and I'm just kind of cringing inside and thinking, I don't even know if I can invite him back after this. Not to this Bible study. He spoke up and said, John, I like that. Maybe I'll come back next week. I about, you know, fell over. We were walking back to the dorm. I said, oh, what'd you like about it? He said, I just like that people are real honest about where they were. You know, that just what they're going through, what they're facing in life, that was really encouraging. It's like, okay, wow, you know. But I ran into that time and time again on a college campus that just being real can be a huge thing. In your personal life, got a few things to say. Ignore the social boundaries. They, whoever they are, can't do anything to you. Worst case, you make it through 4 years and you're out on your own in a world that's not very much like college. And that could be a really good thing. Ultimately, nearly all the social struggles on campus, they feel like they're 10,000 feet high. They're just empty. They're just fighting for a meaningless pride of place. Show Christ's love to marginalized peoples around you, others on the fringes of social circles, the people nobody talks to. Make sure you get your downtime. Invest that time in your relationship with the Lord. You won't regret it. Your intellectual, your physical health is strangely tied to your spiritual health. Something to be aware of is don't let yourself stagnate. That even if you're in a really good situation at college, you may be used to a much swifter spiritual atmosphere at home. Think of a swift stream, lots of water. You know, and you may be used to that, and even a mountain lake can be not nearly as oxygenated for those swimming in it. You know, a college environment, I remember talking with a couple friends, and one of them was just waxing poetic about how, you know, I'm always encouraged when I'm here and I go home. She hadn't met a Christian before she came to college. It's just, it's dull, and I feel like I die a little bit inside until I can get back to this environment and these peers. And I and another friend just looked at each other and kind of shook our heads, because for us, we were used to incredibly intense churches at home. And even though we were in a good situation there, it wasn't like it was at home. So just don't let yourself stagnate. Keep your lines of communication open with your parents, with your pastors back home, with your friends back home. It's far too easy to let the kind of prevailing winds at school shape and bend your thinking. Think of a tree, you know, out on the prairies where the winds are just blowing through. And over time, it starts to lean and starts to twist. That's the way things can happen at school. And it's really useful to keep in touch with people back home to check yourself against. Just kind of, if you notice yourself saying things that shock them, if you notice yourself, you know, disagreeing with them where you might have agreed once before, it's a good check to say, wait a second, you know, was this a good change, or is this something that has just been college wearing down on me? You know, I had a few experiences like that. I remember after a couple of years, college coming back for summer and spending time with some old friends, and I found myself every time I uttered some fairly conservative opinion having to kind of qualify it, saying, well, that's my opinion. I realized, wait a second, I'm totally doing that because of the past couple of years. That's not the way I grew up. I don't need to apologize for this. You know, and I was really encouraged, okay, you know, I need to be comfortable with what I believe more. So yeah, that's something worth checking on. And lastly, invest in and know the difference in between your inner and outer circles. The inner circle is tried and trusted friends, Christians you can trust, yet you can't just live in that bubble, you know, within a bubble. You know, you need to be witnessing to other people. You need to be interacting with other people. So reach out. Draw in, open up, have a wider circle beyond that of people you know. Being real and happy and not beat down as a Christian, living out your witness, it can do wonders for others, whether they're weak and struggling Christians or the unsaved, people who've never been to church. Live out your faith in front of them. But know at the same time who you need to confide in and who you shouldn't listen to if they have criticisms. So not everyone is trusted, not everyone should carry the same weight. Next, being a seven-day Christian. This is a play on a phrase. We used to talk occasionally about the kids who only spent time with the Lord around Christians one or 2 days a week. And the rest of the time, they live just like the world, just like everybody else. That's not who you want to be. First with, find a local church. It can feel, particularly if you came from a really good church back home, you're a member there or something, it can feel like you're just marking time. Oh, I'm just going to church while I'm here and then I'm leaving. No. This is an anchor. This is a safe haven for you, a lifeline when you're in this bubble. Critically, it is both outside the bubble and yet close enough to understand what you're going through. You know, a campus pastor may have a better understanding of what you're dealing with in the social situations than your pastor back home may. You know, so that can be a really powerful place and thing to be. It's also a source of community, a safe place to openly be a Christian, to just not have to worry about the flack from everybody else. You know, that can be a real encouragement. It can be a place to build relationships, to meet professors, staff, other students. You know, if you see somebody in church on Sunday, you know, that might be somebody you can trust and go to on Tuesday when you need to talk about something. So that can be a really good place to notice the other people from campus who show up. Just being around the other age brackets, being around old people, being around kids and babies can be a huge encouragement. I say sometimes that college students are a lower form of life, you know, and when you're just around college students all the time, it's really, really discouraging. And so go hang out with some kids. Go talk some to your elders and talk to some old folks who've been through life. You know, that's a really good thing. And you may be able to find a surrogate family, a family who's willing to take you in, to host you, to have you over for dinner occasionally, you know, just give you a place to go and be yourself off campus. That can be a real gift. I had that a couple of years of my time in college, and it was a beautiful thing. Being involved in a church can be an outlet for ministry, both to others your age, you know, on campus or off campus, also to the broader community. I know a lot of kids were involved in programs like Young Life, where they were Christian college students going into high schools and preaching and encouraging high school students. So that's a really big thing to think about. And lastly, don't discount the importance of just a ride to church. You know, I remember I was in a position where I could take people to church, and I never knew how much of a big deal it was to people until word made its way down the grapevine through someone's family, someone else who I knew back home, that a couple young men had stayed strong and traced a lot of it to just the fact that I was there as another Christian to talk to encourage, you know, for other guys to take to church regularly. So even just the little things like that can make a big difference, particularly when you're an older student. Now, on the other hand, on-campus Christian organizations have a different and complementary set of benefits. They are inescapably part of campus. As opposed to a church, they're always right there. You know, they're meeting in your dining hall or whatever, and the people you see there, you're going to see all week. That can be a real good thing for accountability. As I said before, though, don't succumb to the temptation that says, oh, if I show up at a meeting on Thursday night, that's enough for the week. Church is a separate thing. It's a different thing. And so you really do need both. On-campus organization has a relatively low time and logistic commitment. You know, the Bible studies there are likely to be close. You know, they may be in your dorm. They may be down at the library or something instead of 2 or 5 miles, you know, away on the other side of town, you know, outside town at someone's house. It can be a lot easier to get to. There's a lot of opportunity for public outreach and ministry. In most campus organizations, they have idea of a campus leader or a campus minister. We all know the stereotype of a youth minister that's no use to anybody, you know, who's just there to be trendy. A lot of campus ministers are not like that. They can be intense help. They oftentimes went through that university or university like it before choosing to go into the ministry. And they are going to be the ones who are embedded closest to what you're going through, but have perspective to advise you. The Bible studies and small groups that are offered by an on-campus organization, go out and try that out. The closest communities, your closest friends may be formed in those sorts of little organizations, and they can kind of be your surrogate family in a way that, oh, you know, my Tuesday nights, my Sunday nights, I get to go spend with this little group of Christians who understands what I'm going through. That was a precious thing the entire time I spent in college. There are differences. Some organizations are specifically denominational. Some are not. We're standing here at Presbyterian Church. I had really good experience with a Reformed University Fellowship, which is a Presbyterian denominational branch. Their campus ministers are mostly ordained ministers. Some of the other places I went, some of the other organizations I was involved with weren't rooted in one particular denomination. They were independent organizations. They were really strong, really encouraging things at the same time. Pick and choose. I mean, a lot of it depends on a specific campus, just how that one ministry has functioned. You know, even a few years down the line, the organizations at my university have shifted. You know, they have different ministers, they have different groups of people going, they may have different benefits. For a while, I attended two at one university of different organizations just because they met on different nights and they had different pluses and minuses. So one I went to their small groups, and the other one I went to their big weekly meeting. So, you know, there's things to balance about, there's things to think about there. And lastly, with their high visibility on campus of a campus Christian organization, they can help provide that primary identification. You know, to say, I go to RUF on Tuesdays and I'm an economics major sort of thing. So that can be a really powerful thing in helping identify. You know, it's really easy to drag your friend from the dorm if they're just going to the library, you know, on Wednesday night. So one more thing for homeschool students in particular, on be aware, I'm sure you are, you're going into battle with what, like the Puritans used to say, the world, the flesh, and the devil. College is likely going to be the greatest time of confrontation and temptation you run into in your life because you are embedded in the world. You know, you're going to run into, at the very least around you every day, greed and lust and pride and arrogance and gluttony and drunkenness and blasphemy and fornication. And that's the simple list. Just be aware. You need the full armor of God. You're going into battle here. And don't think that just because you grew up in a good family and haven't had to struggle with most of these things, that it's not going to tempt you. It's never going to be an issue. Remember what Scripture says, you know, nothing comes temptation-wise, but that which is common to man. You know, you may find yourself struggling with some things you never thought were thinkable, but there is hope. You know, that this is where maintaining contact with home, being in a solid local assembly, being in an on-campus Christian organization can really help check that, you know, and keep you grounded. Although it should be obvious to all of us, reject the lie that hidden sin or pornography or even just something I do at college that I don't talk about at home, that's somehow unknown and you shouldn't be ashamed about it, because it will come back to bite you if you do. The thing is, though, I've talked a lot about the challenge. I've talked a lot about the things you're likely to deal with. But I have to say, there is hope. You've been raised in the faith. You've been raised for challenges. You've been trained to deal with challenges. You're trained to deal with the intellectual things as well as the philosophical, you know. You can be ready for this, and He can keep you strong. So in short, victory is possible. The temptation will be other than you expect, but you can survive in the Lord's strength. Getting plugged into the Christian community early. I'm talking about, don't let a Sunday go by without going to church somewhere. You know, it may not be the one you go to the second Sunday or the third Sunday. But don't let yourself slide and wait a month or two. If you wait 3 months, you might never go to church when you're at college again. Get plugged in early. The academics are a challenge, but you needn't fear them. Remember, you have the answers. Your professors may not. You know the meaning of life. You know why we're here. You know, don't feel bad about disagreeing with your professors. Invest in close Christian friends, but reach out to a wider circle you can influence and witness to. Show grace and love, merciful righteousness to your fellows through your life, through your witness. Just being a real Christian, neither running from them nor compromising with them, is an incredible witness and challenge. Become friends with everyone. Reach out to them, and the Lord will bring you opportunities to share your faith and to be able to give a defense for the hope that's within you. You know, you may be blessed to see some of those enemies become friends. Keep your lines of communication open with your pastor, your parents, and your God. Spend time with the Lord. Spend time on the phone back home. Don't be ashamed of that. You know, talk to your pastors locally and back home, you know, and get the encouragement you need. So to close with a final word, be strong in the Lord and in the strength of His might. Put on the full armor of God so that you'll be able to stand firm against the schemes of the devil. For our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the powers, against the world forces of this darkness, against the spiritual forces of wickedness in the heavenly places. Therefore, take up the full armor of God so that you'll be able to resist in the evil day, having done everything to stand firm.
Wow, there's a lot of great experience rolled up in what you've been listening to. That was our son, John Calvin Young, at a recent conference in Peoria, Illinois, talking about the importance of maintaining your faith and growing your faith, even on a secular campus. Look, we hope you've enjoyed this episode of Making Biblical Family Life Practical. We try to come to you every week, and we hope that you'll find us either here on the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. You can find us out on iTunes or now on Google Play. That's a new addition. Or you can come to our link, halandmelanie.com/radio, and that'll bring you right back here to the archives. You can get all kinds of great programs that have been saved up for nearly 2 years now, and so there's a lot of episodes back there you probably want to go back and check out. And look, if you appreciate this kind of content, if you find this sort of information helpful and encouraging, we really want your support. The best thing you can do, go out there to iTunes, subscribe, and leave us a comment. You know, those things are important for ratings. And if you'd like to be more tangible in your support, how about become a patron? You can become a regular supporter, just $1 a month, and that'll get you on the inside. We've got some neat incentives out here for those who are regular supporters. Come out to patreon.com/halandmelanie. Like we said, just $1 a month makes a big difference. But if you have the means and you want to support us in a more reasonable or more significant way, we welcome that too. Until next time, I'm Hal Young. Thank you so much for joining us. We hope it's been helpful, and we hope that God will bless you for listening.
You've been listening to Making Biblical Family Life Practical with Hal and Melanie Young. If you found this program interesting, challenging, and encouraging, why not join us on the web at halandmelanie.com. That's HalandMelanie.com. Or follow us on social media. You can find us on Facebook at Facebook.com/HalandMelanie or Facebook.com/RaisingRealMen. This program is a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. Join us next week when we'll be back to talk about making biblical family life practical. Until then, thank you and God bless you for listening.